for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Portland.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Good morning. Welcome to this month's episode of Voices for the Animals. I'm Michelle Coppola, and along with Noah Bristol and Julianne Schwartz, we are very proud to bring you this monthly program here on KABU Portland. We strive to be a source of news and awareness about the treatment, welfare, rights, and issues affecting the other sentient, non-human creatures with whom we share this planet, and we truly appreciate you listening today. So I hope you've managed to stay healthy and sane during this time. What is it all the commercials are saying? It's challenging, unusual, difficult, uncertain. All those definitely apply. I know that one of the things that I am missing the most is travel. And that is kind of the focus of our show today. If you've done some traveling, maybe you've seen or even done things like riding elephants or camels, swimming with dolphins, gone to a killer whale performing show at a place like SeaWorld, you don't want to miss this conversation because animal tourism, really not much of a vacation for the animals. This morning, we are so lucky to have with us Ben Williamson. He's the program's director of World Animal Protection US, which you may have heard of by its former name, the World Society for the Protection of Animals. They have offices in 15 countries worldwide. They're involved in rescue work, helping animals in disaster areas, campaigning for animal rights, animal agriculture, humane education, virtually every aspect of animal welfare. Their work is vast and comprehensive on behalf of animals. Ben, I am so excited to have you here, and thank you for being with us. Can you tell us a bit about your history and how you became involved in this work?
I got involved because, well, I've been an animal rights professional for about 10 years now, and I was with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, in London and then in Los Angeles for around 7 years. And I really liked World Animal Protection's approach. I noticed in 2015 that this organization that I'd never heard of had convinced 100 travel companies to ditch elephant rights. And that was something that I definitely stood up and took notice for. And indeed, I read a little bit more about them. And I really like the way World Animal Protection applies scientific analysis to everything that they do. So all of their campaigns are backed by reports, and they work with some of the world's leading universities. And I've been here for over a year and a half now, and it's great. It's all working really well.
You know, some of the most abused animals in the tourism industry are elephants. I know WAP is doing and has done quite a bit of work in this area, and the use and abuse of elephants is widespread, especially throughout Southeast Asia. In addition to elephant rides, can you describe how else these animals are utilized in tourism and what is involved in their capture and training?
Sure. Well, last week, in fact, World Animal Protection released new footage of the elephant training methods known as the crush. And this was the first time in over 15 years that footage like this has been filmed. And it shows training methods that industry figures said was no longer the case. But our investigation shows that it's actually the most routine way that elephants are trained to give rides and perform. And it's happened to all of the captive elephants in Thailand who work in the entertainment industry. We've seen a lot of progress with elephant riding in the last few years. The acceptability of rides has dropped, in fact, by 12 percentage points, from 53% in 2014 to 41% in 2019. And a lot of venues have actually begun to advertise the fact that they don't offer rides because a lot of tourists now find it unpalatable. Right. But what they're doing instead, and to get to your question, is they're advertising things like feeding activities and washing activities, never mind the fact that elephants have been able to wash themselves perfectly well.
Right.
But these direct contact activities mean that elephants are trained in exactly the same way in order to be submissive and to be close and still.
Really? Okay. I was not aware of that. Yeah.
Well, in order to get them to not act as a wild animal would, they're
right.
Trained through these fearful punishment methods. And it's completely abhorrent and something that needs to long be consigned to the history books.
You know, I have seen the video, the crush video that you have put up on the WAP site, and I will provide a link to it. I will warn people it is a difficult watch, but if you are considering doing interactive elephant activities, it's important that you do watch it. Also, with the pandemic, I'm seeing news stories and posts about how the elephant handlers in these countries are struggling because tourism has died down. What is happening to those elephants who were their livelihood?
Well, hundreds of elephants have actually gone back home. So most elephants are only rented by the tourist venues.
Oh.
They're sent back to their owners in more rural areas. And in many villages, these elephants may end up just being chained in nearby patches of forest or near the houses of the owners. Many owners will likely go back to tourism once the situation recovers. There's no other income opportunity for elephants in Thailand.
Right.
Our major worry at the moment is that elephants in Thailand and other parts of Southeast Asia have nothing to do, and the owners will think that this is a good time to breed them. An elephant's gestation period is around 2 years, meaning that in 2 years' time, we could see a baby boom. That's meaning that their cruel cycle of abuse is going to continue for another generation. So right now, our Thai office is working with the government to place an emergency ban on the breeding of elephants, because it's clear that the owners can't manage their elephants' well-being in a downturn. So why on earth would you bring in any more elephants if you're not able to provide for them?
Well, what about elephant sanctuaries like Elephant Nature Park in Chiang Mai, places that take in elephants who were formerly abused or used in logging, that sort of thing? Are those acceptable and more ethical activities?
They are more ethical. Elephant Nature Park is one of a handful of venues in Thailand that are doing the right thing. And World Animal Protection researchers have been to them all. You know, we've got staff who has an elephant PhD, and we've done an audit of all of the Thai venues. So Elephant Nature Park, for example, doesn't allow touching. That's one of the requirements of being a good venue. Humans required to maintain a safe distance from the animals. The elephants are allowed to behave naturally and are not given commands through the threat of punishment by their trainers. And no good sanctuary would allow breeding either, so these elephants are all rescues. And it can be really difficult to tell the difference between a good venue and a bad one. So we do have some information on our website. If you go to worldanimalprotection.us/elephant-friendly, you'll see kind of a checklist of things to look out for if you're thinking about going to one of these places.
Very important. We'll make sure to put that link up as well. Now, the scope of animal entertainment and tourism is a really big one, right? So I want to focus on some of the most well-known and popular activities in tourist destinations. You know, most people are aware of the documentary Blackfish, so there's some awareness about the dark side of dolphin and killer whale shows. However, I want to talk about something that is really widespread in tropical tourist destinations all over the world, and that's swimming with dolphins and other aquatic wildlife. You know, a lot of people think that, oh, you know, it's pretty benign. They're in the ocean, right? Can you shed some light on why this is so problematic?
Sure. Well, swimwear activities are usually more of an exclusive activity for individuals or small groups of people to interact with one or a few dolphins directly in a tank. And during this activity, the dolphin is expected to be in close proximity to the visitor so that they can touch or kiss or hug or hang on to the animal's dorsal fin or get the dolphin to pull them through the water. And the dolphins are thwarted if they attempt to move away. The trainers recall them and use dead fish as a reward for acting against their natural preferences. And these interactions can be stressful for dolphins. They may not allow the animals to choose to rest or become secluded if that's what they prefer. They can also lead to behavioral changes that disrupt the social bonds in a group of dolphins. And we've seen time and time again, these activities can lead to visitor injuries. Dolphins can become aggressive or overly energetic during these interactions, and children and other people can get hurt. But it's really as with all dolphin activities, it's really the captive setting, which is the most fundamentally problematic for the animals. The lack of space is a primary concern. And all dolphin entertainment takes place within these settings, and it really represents a life sentence from which the dolphin can't escape.
That's true, even if they are in an ocean space, which I have seen swimming with dolphin activities in an ocean-type space, but they are still captive.
Exactly. If they're captive, the rules are slightly different. So activities with wild dolphins should be discouraged. At the very least, it must be carefully managed to prevent swimmers from approaching or doing anything that intrudes on or affects the animals. But if they're captive, they really have no choice about it.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland. We are listener-supported community radio, and none of our programming exists without your help. If shows like this one are meaningful and important to you, please support us by going to kboo.fm and making a donation of any amount. Just look to the top right and click on Donate. It is that easy, and we thank you so much. We are speaking with Ben Williamson, Program Director of World Animal Protection in New York. Our topic today, animal tourism and entertainment. If you have ever been on vacation, swam with dolphins, maybe taken an elephant ride, trekked down a trail on the back of a mule or camel, you'll want to listen to this show. Now, the thing is, our goal here really isn't to lay a bunch of guilt on you if you've done those things in the past, but instead to inform you as to why they're not a vacation for the animals that are involved in them. That way, as they say, you can make good choices in the future, because when you know better, you do better. You know, one of the misconceptions I think people have when they interact with exotic wildlife in these settings is that if the animal was born in captivity, such as those born in zoos and wildlife parks and trotted out for photo ops, that sort of thing, is that these animals are somehow more domesticated. Can you explain why that is not true?
Sure. A wild animal never loses their wild instincts just because they're born in captivity. So they don't lose the urge that they've evolved to have to hunt or forage simply because they were born outside of their natural homes. In contrast, dogs have been domesticated over thousands of years, but most wild animals would still try to avoid contact with humans, and they haven't evolved to enjoy the experience of being pulled around for photo ops or given commands. And most tourists who take photos with wild animals love animals. You know, this is one of the strange paradox of all these things. It's actually animal lovers who cause the most harm to animals. And it's understandable that people want to take a selfie with a sloth or post a picture with a pink river dolphin. But if they really knew the suffering that these wild animals endure for this type of photo opportunity, They probably want to put their phones away. And it's, you know, it's understandable. An animal in an unnatural setting might seem docile and relaxed, but for the foreign environments to them, they can become scared really easily. They're often disoriented. Or they may have simply given up the will to live, which happens with many wild animals who spend their lives in small barren cages or tanks, and we see this all the time.
It is very heartbreaking, for sure. Since we're talking about domestication, here in the U.S. And also around the world, many horses, mules, donkeys are used in animal tourism. And from what I've read, their lives are very difficult. They're packed up and forced to carry heavy loads and people up and down hills and trails and towns and in canyons. Can you describe the kind of lives these animals have?
Sure. We get reports of animal suffering all the time in these kind of places. These animals are often used to lug tourists up canyons, as you say, and carry equipment. Most people go to these places to hike and explore the beauty of the area, but for the animals that have the sun beating down on them, they're forced to carry the workload. We've seen reports of, and indeed investigations of, animals slipping down these narrow trails and falling to their death. We've seen these animals not being kept in fantastic conditions, their pens littered with trash, while others are being tethered without any protection from the sun. And it doesn't need to happen. There's plenty of ways to enjoy the majesty of nature without subjecting an animal to your backpack or to carry your load. There was one investigation that we did when I was at PETA of a venue in the Middle East, Petra in Jordan, which, as some people might know, is a wonder of the world. And the security go around on electric carts, but the animals, unfortunately, are the ones who have to bear the brunt of the tourists who lug them around on their backs. So, you know, it's definitely something that it's not traditional, it's not natural. It's all for the paying public, and the best thing that you can do is vote with your wallet and make sure that you're not a part of the animal suffering.
I do want to talk a little bit about the controversy in the past few years, especially in American cities for sure, with regard to carriage horses, like in New York and in Chicago. Chicago is going to stop the horse-drawn carriage rides next year. They're still fighting the battle where you are in New York. Why should people avoid taking these rides, and what is the harm to the animal? The people who drive the carts and make their living this way, they often say, I love my horse and I take very good care of it, but that's not really always the case, correct?
I've no doubt that people who claim to love their animals believe that they're telling the truth, but I find it very hard to weave that story. You know, I love a lot of things that bring me joy and financial reward, but I would never treat animals the way that horse carriages certainly are treated. Making horses pull oversized loads, it's cruel, and they're forced to work in all weather conditions to dodge traffic, and they haven't evolved to walk on the hard human-made surfaces that we make them walk on. They often develop respiratory ailments because they breathe in exhaust fumes, and they can suffer from debilitating leg problems, as I say, from working on these hard surfaces. And their accidents waiting to happen. Unfortunately, we see every month, it seems, like a new video of a horse panicking in the street or keeling over happens. So if people live in cities where carriage rides are still allowed, I would encourage them to contact their local legislators and ask if they sponsor a ban. We're seeing a lot of action, as you say, in Chicago and New York. We're slowly chipping away at the horse carriage industry here. And, you know, it's about time that these things were done with.
Ben, I want to circle back to Africa here and talk a little bit about safaris, certainly not hunting safaris, but the kind where tourists are taken into preserves and see and photograph wild animals, and like more passive things like going to see mountain gorillas in their habitat in Rwanda. I've snorkeled with manatees in Florida, but I did keep a respectful distance. Are these things harmful to animals, something more passive like this?
Not really. In fact, they can be good for animals. I guess the best thing that could happen for the planet's animals would probably be if the human race disappeared, but that's not likely. But responsible wildlife tourism can be a benefit. It can boost local economies, creating a market for wildlife watching instead of wildlife hunting. And it can end up paying for things like anti-poaching patrols and fences and drone surveillance and the kinds of things that, that animals need and to protect them from humans, really. Now, it's definitely not easy, and World Animal Protection works with some of the biggest travel companies on, such as Airbnb and Booking.com and TripAdvisor, to help responsibly feed the demand from people who, as I say, simply want to be close to animals and have a great coexistence with nature. And our job is to make the responsible wildlife activities pay more than the irresponsible wildlife activities. And in that way, we can actually help animals instead of hurting them.
Right. As you said, a lot of the activities we've been talking about are wrapped up in conservation, the habitat and the animal, or in the economic survival of a community. So in some cases, in a more passive activity, they can be a net good. And is there a way for people to tell the difference? Are there certain ways, things to look for? I know you mentioned earlier when it comes to the elephant activities, but are there other things that people should look for when doing something that involves animals, when they're traveling or doing tourism?
That's a really good question, and it can sometimes just be, you know, I can't even tell whether an activity is good for the animal or not. And I've been doing this a long time. It would take a veterinarian to be able to spot if the animal is suffering. I think a rule of thumb that we often try to get people to think about is, if you can hug it, if you can kiss it, if you can ride it, if you can have a selfie with it, the chances are it's been cruel, that the animal has been abused to be that close to you. So observing animals at a distance, being respectful of their time, letting them come over to you if they want to, but not in a way that changes their environment by offering them food, that kind of thing. We should have a respectful relationship with wildlife at a distance. So I think the best thing that people can do is get online. The big animal organizations like ours have lots of information. We've done a lot of research on some of these places. Also, read the advice on TripAdvisor. That's what I do. Get on TripAdvisor, see the comments, see if anyone's had an adverse experience with one of these places. And if you have, then, you know, I would avoid it.
You did mention TripAdvisor. There are other organizations, other travel outfits and so forth, who are refusing to be involved in more unethical animal tourism activities. What other companies are taking steps to minimize the unethical tourism?
Well, last year we worked with Airbnb on their animal welfare policy, and it's one of the most progressive animal welfare policies of any major travel organization. So they completely ban things like captive dolphin experiences, things like using animals for sport. And so their animal experiences are just wildlife friendly. So mostly about observation and interacting with animals in their homes, not ours. And that's something that we really encourage the travel industry to pay attention to, especially now as we're building back from the pandemic and the industry that's just completely shut down over the last 6 months. We need to build back in a way that doesn't harm animals for their long term and the tourism industry's long term survival. You know, the COVID pandemic came from animals. It came from animals being too close to one another and then too close to them. So we really need to think about our relationship with animals in the tourism industry, and we can't just go on as we have before, because that's what got us into this mess.
Are there other animal attractions and activities that we haven't touched on that people should avoid when they go traveling or on vacation?
Definitely. There's unfortunately a long list. I guess one of the most popular ones is people might be tempted to visit tiger temples or otherwise have their photos taken with big cats, and they should definitely be avoided. Tiger cubs are also cruelly separated from their mothers, like elephants. When they're young, they're used as photo props with tourists. They're constantly viewed and mishandled hundreds of times a day, which leads to stress and injury. And they're punished to stop aggressive behavior, which is only their natural behavior. And in the US too, tiger cub petting is a problem. So no doubt many of your listeners will be familiar with the Netflix documentary Tiger King.
Right. We did a show on that, actually. My last show in April, we talked about that with someone from the Humane Society International and locally as well about that. One of the virtually only good things that has come of it is there has been a little bit more awareness about how horrible this is.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, really, Tiger King, because, you know, on the one hand, we're part of the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance, and calls to the BCSA went up by 1,000% after Tiger King. So that's great that people, you know, might be taken in by the apparent glamour of the whole thing. So really, you should avoid those places overseas, but then realize that they exist here in the US and avoid them too.
So Ben, when people are traveling or when they are planning the activities they're going to do when they travel, what would you like them to keep in mind to ensure that any activities they're doing that involve animals are humane?
For World Animal Protection, it's all about following the golden rule. If you can hug it, if you can kiss it, if you can ride it or take a selfie with it, the chances are it's cruel and it's best avoided. We need to have a good mutually beneficial relationship with animals, and it's entirely possible. It would be horrible if we lost animals altogether from the planet, which is the kind of existence that we're facing right now. We've lost 60% of the wild species on the planet in the last 50 years, and we're facing a sixth extinction now. If we can't get our act together and exist in a way with wild animals that is mutually beneficial to all species, then we'll just have to give them up completely.
We so appreciate you being on the show today. Your organization is doing amazing work globally on behalf of animals. So I'd like you to tell us how people can find out more about what you're up to and to get involved.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, thank you for having me on the show. So people who want to find out more about World Animal Protection are welcome to sign up to our mailing list. And you can find us at worldanimalprotection.us. And also follow us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. We're World Animal Protection US.
We've been speaking with Ben Williamson, Program Director of World Animal Protection US. They're the stateside office of World Animal Protection International. And as he mentioned, they are working to help animals, both wild and domestic, globally and here in the United States. If you didn't catch it when he mentioned it, you can find it along with a podcast of this show on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/voicesfortheanimals. It's also on our Facebook page under Voices for the Animals. The links to the elephant crush video we talked about will be on both pages. Like I said, it's not an easy watch, but it's definitely something that you'll want to see before you plan any tourist activities that involve elephants. I'm also going to post the link to the humane elephant activities that you can participate in on the World Animal Protection page as well. Don't forget to hit us up on our Facebook page if you have ideas for future shows or any comments about the program. We'd love to hear from you. Our Facebook page is also a place where you can keep up with what's happening in the animal welfare community. My name's Michelle Coppola. For myself and for our other program hosts, Noah Bristol and Juliette Schwartz, we want to thank you so much for listening to Voices for the Animals here on 90.7 KBOO FM. We'll be back again on the fourth Friday of September with another episode. And until then, stay well and be kind to animals.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/KBOO Radio.
We also provide content to the Free Music Archive,
an interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/KBOO.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
You're listening! You're listening! You're listening! You're listening! Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins. I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye, 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 bye.
Welcome to Film at 11 here on Community Radio, KBOO Portland. This week we have another pre-code film, a French classic, some current works, and another cinema book. I managed to catch up with three recent releases.